Wild West on your number one stop for kayak fishing information on kayakfishingradio.com. I'm your host, Dennis Spike, joined by Northwest kayak fishing expert and co-host, Isaac the Nothing Miller, at the helm in Portland, Oregon. I'm speaking to you from Bodega Bay, California. Good evening, everyone.
I don't know, can you hear me?
Have I got you live?
Yeah, I'm on here if you can hear me.
Oh, there we go. Who have I got on board?
This is Isaac.
Isaac, welcome back, man.
Hey, thank you. I'm actually still on my way home right now, so
thanks
might
for
sound
tuning
a little
in.
Funny.
Thanks for
Absolutely.
Tuning in. Lots going on. This week, I'd like to talk about kayak fishing here on the Eastern Pacific and a little bit beyond. I want to give a tribute to a great radio man. He's still alive. A real big inspiration to me. Quite an interesting story. Get some reports, Isaac. You been on the water?
I was on the water, what was that, a week and a half ago. I was
Old
out in Tillamook Bay.
What about
Tillamook
you?
Bay, we had a... Sorry, I was out at Tillamook Bay, and what do we have? We had some wild coho, no keeper Chinook, which is what we were looking for. Tons of Dungeness crab, though, man. We got a lot of crab, and I still have about 3 pounds of picked crab meat in my freezer.
We're really excited about that crab season opening. You're still fishing
there? I'm sorry?
You're still fishing the salmon up in Oregon, Washington coast?
Yeah, we're still fishing salmon here.
Well, they don't seem to be here. The salmon season ends here on Sunday at sunset. The rock fishing's outstanding now that the red tide is gone, and it's a good thing it's gone. It did a lot of damage this year. And the crabbing starts in just about a week.
Midnight
Sunday.
Nice.
They've been putting
nice.
Some good quality fish on board around here. Lots of big reds and coppers, copper rockfish, one of my favorites. They're showing up late in the season. And quite a few lingcod are showing up too, fish pushing the 20-pound mark. Not too bad down here. That said, good conditions. Excited about the crab. The early reports are good. I think it's going to be a good season on both ends. You know, last year we had our first good Dungeness season in quite a few, in 3 years. And the market price, which usually comes down to about $2.99 a pound around here, never really came down because the reports were that British Columbia didn't have such a great season on the Dungeness, and it kept the prices high in all the markets.
I see. My understanding was, from what I was told, the Chinese developed a taste for Dungeness, and they were the reason the prices went up.
That sounds like a lot more plausible reason for me, because on the local end, those prices always stayed down. It seemed like there was enough to keep the Eastern Pacific. What took them so long over there on the other side of the Pacific?
I have no idea.
That's one of the best crabs there. I'm sure, though, and I'm especially sure that it's going to be true with the state of California, that increased demand for the resource is going to do just that, raise the price, but it's not going to harm the fishery because there's quotas, and it isn't going to get any worse than it is as far as take based on demand.
Agreed.
I hope you do. Did you see any nice fish today?
Today? No, I was working today, so had some nice coho come in. But,
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Wild fish?
They look really good. Wild fish, yeah.
Nice.
These are tribal caught wild fish out of Washington, out of the Puget Sound and some of those rivers. So, really nice stuff.
How's the halibut fishing?
That's
Wrong time of year. We were talking about it earlier, going down to 500-600 feet to catch a halibut.
Right, yeah, up here, that's the way we do it.
Crazy. It kind of knocks the kayaks out.
There's a few good events
going on this week on the eastern Pacific coast. There's over in Trinidad, near Humboldt County, a spot called Trinidad. I think they've got a little event going on there. And exciting stuff. They just had, I think we're going to get Chip back here shortly. Is there a Florida boondoggle just passed or just coming up?
I think they're talking about having one in February.
Oh, is it that far down the road? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I think it's that far down. I could be wrong about that, but that's what I believe to be true. I could be wrong.
So I wanted to bring something up, Isaac, about this whole radio venue. We're starting to reach a lot of anglers, and I put a link out today on a Facebook page because my brother alerted me to the firing of the last DJ. And that would be a guy in Los Angeles named Jim Ladd. Do you remember the song by Tom Petty? It's not that old a song. Called The Last DJ.
Which, I'm sorry?
Do you remember a song by Tom Petty called The Last DJ?
I do, yeah.
Kind of a bluesy, mopey little tune, if you will. And it goes, and it was actually written about a guy in Los Angeles named Jim Ladd. Jim is a legendary rock and roll disc jockey who's been on the air for about 40 years, and he's interviewed everybody from John Lennon to the Red Hot Chili Peppers and even more current than that. And he was always the kind of guy who, you know, back in the day, if I can date myself here, when we listened to the radio, the disc jockey on the other end on a rock and roll station or a jazz station or a blues station came in after writing his own program. It was a real job. It was a real artful thing and a real soulful thing. They would write their show 4 hours on the radio, and they would play the songs that they wanted to play and the songs that people wanted to hear. Well, back in the early 80s, I guess it was, maybe even the late 70s, probably the early 80s, when all the media companies started buying up all the radio stations, popular and unpopular stations, the programming took a big change. So the majority, just about everything that we listen to, whether it's bebop or jazz or classic rock or hip-hop, is programmed radio. It is a list that comes down statistically that says these are the most listened to songs and people therefore want to listen to those songs. Well, a lot of changes have happened over the year with radio, and I'm not just talking about music, because there is a world of radio out there now. It's probably one of the most popular channels for secular programming, for talk radio of every nature known to mankind, sports, agriculture, homemaking, whatever it might be, it's there on the radio. But most of these stations are either real big with lots of advertising or real small. And that's where you tend to find the last year folksy shows hanging out now. Well, Ladd got fired by one of the rock stations in Los Angeles 20 years ago or so. And one of my illustrious past vocations was as a retail tobacconist in Southern California. And to make a long story short, I ended up hooking up with Ladd, and over handmade cigars, and it became a wonderful friendship and acquaintance. And during that time, Jim got back on the radio and had been back there for the last 15 years at KLOS Radio in Los Angeles in Southern California. And Jim had what was called free-form radio. He was the last disc jockey in the country who was doing a rock music program on a station of this caliber, where he blocked up his commercials time and he had shows and programs, and he brought in his own music, wrote his own programs. And it really was something unique, something genuine, and something that a generation of radio listeners really don't have much clue about anymore, because it hasn't been that way in their lifetime. So I got a text from my brother this morning, knowing that I'd want to know this news, that Jim got fired again. And it got me thinking to my show that I was doing here in Occidental on LP radio. That's the low power frequency that the FCC gave to communities about 6 or 7 years ago. It's only 5 watts of transmission power, so you basically have a 10 or 20 mile radius if you don't have trees or mountains or hills in your way. And a lot of good things are being done, but they're not reaching people because of the low power. And Jim was reaching people. I don't know that his show was syndicated, but it certainly was online. And it was really something that, I don't want to liken it to losing Andy Rooney on 60 Minutes, but I'll liken it to losing 60 Minutes. And it's going to be missed. There are some of the petty lyrics about Last DJ. There goes the Last DJ, who plays what he wants to play and says what he wants to say. And there goes your freedom of choice. There goes the last human voice. And there goes the Last DJ. LAD has had an impact on thousands, tens of thousands of people in shaping what they listen to, with a lot of comment, social comment on top of it. And I don't think he'll be missed for long. I think that'll come back. And I know that in everything I've done in radio, right up to kayakfishingradio.com, there's a sense of that guy and what he always tried, the messages he tried to get across, and using the radio as a tool as it is. And losing a great job and hurting a lot of people for, I got to tell you, it's corporate greed. Whoever's going to replace him isn't going to be getting paid near as much. But it is a loss. And I think that in today's digital, electronic, and satellite day and age, there's definitely an opportunity for free-form rock and roll radio music.
Absolutely.
Because we're seeing it with every other venue. And I bet there's probably some good rock on Blog Talk Radio.
Sure there are.
There's got to be. Well, there's been a lot of fishing going on here in the central northern California bite. I haven't seen great reports in Southern California. However, I've seen a great report, Isaac, and that's the croaker bite, the white sea bass. For listeners who don't know, white sea bass is similar to the, I believe it's a tilefish, the Chilean sea bass. It's similar in appearance and table value anyway. And it is a great Eastern Pacific fish, mostly caught from Monterey Bay south. And those fish have been going off, I think, for about 6 months. And the best anglers, the most skilled and experienced anglers, and that could be people who are just fishing this season, because it just takes one good bite to get skills and experience, have been out there whacking 30 and 40 pound fish.
Nice.
I got a call. What's that?
I was saying those are some of the best fish down there, in my opinion. I just love sea bass.
It is one of the greatest.
Bass. Oh, it is amazing.
Indeed. Chip, have we got you live, buddy?
Yeah, I'm here, Spiker. Can you hear me?
Thanks for coming through. I'm trying to bring Chuck into the fold here.
Cool, and we got Chuck on the line, too.
We do. I don't know why he's looking muted here. I'm going to try to bring him in one more time.
I think that both of us are trying to do that.
Oh, okay, then I'll keep my finger off the button. There you go. Give me some news there, Chip. Tell me a story. How are you?
I'm good, man. We're just, it's Friday night, man. It's a little drizzly here in Atlanta. Temperatures are starting to drop. Nothing like you guys are seeing over there, though.
You know, it's a beautiful month. Temperatures are dropping at night, but the day is tepid, and the fishing is great. I've got 2 days scheduled, the 5th of November for crabbing and the 12th of November for fishing. and I'm really excited about it. Work got a little more serious. I took yet another job on my long list of jobs for the kayak fishing business, and it's going to keep me busy for a while. I'm really happy. But, you know, the fishing, I remember in the early days when I first started this, I had a mentor. It was Pete Barana from the now-defunct Pacific Fisherman magazine, and he walked me through a trade show, and here I am, a guy on a kayak, you know, when he told me, now that you're in the fishing business, you're going to find you go a couple of years without fishing. And I remember laughing in his face. And it wasn't exactly that I went a couple of years without fishing, but I did go quite a long period with very little fishing time. So you got a report for us, Chip?
Well, we spent the weekend in Cedar Key. We only got one day of fishing out, but it was with Greg Becker, his son Robert. Bill,
oh, great.
Was there also. Haywood was with us.
Did you guys find any red?
Well, I caught one about a 26-inch red there late in the afternoon on a piece of shrimp. But the water was cool, man. The water chilled up, so I think they were all headed back up into the shallows and
the
creeks.
Into the shallows where it's warmer.
Yeah.
What's the flight range there?
18 to 27. So who's
the
upper slot? Yeah, he was a keeper, but I didn't keep him.
No, I understand. That's a great fish, though.
Yeah, it was a nice fish. I think Bill posted a picture there on yakangler.com. I heard you ask earlier. I was trying to get on. I was having some Skype issues. But the Boondoggle coming up. The next one is President's Day weekend, which is February. It'll be the 17th through the 20th. That's the core days. Some people get there a little early. Some may leave a little late. But it's in Chokoloskee, Florida. That's on the southern tip, just a couple of miles south of Everglades City.
Chokoloskee is famous in the kayak fishing world.
Yeah, so we'll be staying with the fine folks there at Chokoloskee Island Park, CIP.
Nice.
Linda and her husband there are real nice hosts, and we've got the pavilion for Saturday and Sunday night, so we can sit around and expand on our exploits of the days. But we've already got 19 or 20 folks already lined up to show up there on yakangler.com. Yeah, it's going to be a good weekend.
There was an event last weekend south of Sacramento in the Sacramento River Delta, which pretty much runs from San Francisco all the way up to Sacramento. And it's a very, very impressive, the biggest estuary on the Pacific Coast, on the U.S. Pacific Coast, and a really incredible piece of water used for shipping and commerce and all of that. But we draw a lot of water off of it to quench the thirst of Southern California, as well as send a lot of that water out to farming. The big salmon collapse in California had a lot to do with water diversion. That was one of the key factors out of the Sacramento Delta area. And the most recent salmon collapse was Delta fish, the prehistoric strains of Delta salmon. Anyway, there was a kayak fishing shop, actually four stores, has a kayak dealership going there, and they had four events. That culminated with giving away a very cool boat, an ocean kayak. And 96 anglers showed up, and it was a lot of striped bass fishing. You guys got stripers on the East Coast. I know you got them in the Atlantic. You got freshwater stripers too?
We got them up in Lakeland here.
So the striped bass fishing was good. They said as far as the fishing goes, it was slow because the fish were small, all schoolers. But a couple of two-foot fish were caught, 24-inchers. And when it gets red hot up in that delta, you're going to be catching 30, 40, 50-pound striped bass on your kayak. Great fun fishing. So that's the report.
Oh, it's a good sleigh ride.
Inland. They are sleigh rides. And seeing those fisheries come back, you know, my folks live on the Hudson River on the Jersey side, just overlooking like mid-Manhattan. And you look at that water down there, and you couldn't think anything could live in it. But every once in a while, that bass boat shows up, and those guys are out there hunting the stripers. And I should say striped bass boat. But even in those dark, murky commercial rivers, the striped bass population is coming through. And that has a lot to do with conservation efforts, you know, from the angler lobbies. It has most everything to do with that. And I'm glad to see it. Chuck, welcome to the show.
If he's listening.
Yeah, I'm here. I have not been fishing much lately, if that's what you asked. I'm sorry, my son was coughing in the background.
It's probably that time of year.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's definitely right. That time of year. No, I'll tell you what, I've gotten some really, really good reports from guys that have been fishing the last couple of days in my area. Lots of big schools of big bull redfish all the way up to 50 inches. Lots of big schools of slot-sized fish. And tons of trout. Our big black drum have moved in on all the causeways. So for those folks that want to get out and try and wrestle a 60-pound black drum out from underneath a bridge piling, you can go do that anywhere you want, up and down the
radical.
So
I guess that's when you put the Spectra on.
Oh yeah. Well, we all pretty much fish Spectra down here. There's not very many guys that are still using monofilament at all. And but yeah, it's a different kind of fishing. It's definitely not for the guys that like the finesse style of fishing. There's no way you're going to pull a 60-pound drum out from underneath one of these bridges with anything lighter than, say, 50-pound Power Pro and probably close to 80-pound monofilament leader.
Is that even doable on a kayak, or do you have to be in a boat?
No. You can do it in a kayak for sure. There's a key to it. Just like catching the big triple tail that we get off our coast around the buoy cans. The key is once you get that initial bite, not to get too excited and start cranking. You really just want to kind of let that fish do whatever he needs to do until you can kind of like feel him. What we do is we finger the line as opposed to use the drag. We leave our bales open and just hold finger tight pressure to him. And it's not enough to sink the hook in his face. But when they've got a full-size blue crab in their mouth and they're sitting there munching on it, it takes a minute or two for them to finish their meal. A lot of times they'll swim away from the pylons to get away from the other drum that are trying to suck the crab away from them. And when that happens, then you put the wood to them, so to speak, and hold on. And a lot of times they won't swim back to the pylons. A lot of times they'll swim out for open water, again, trying to get away from the other. So it's definitely doable. I've done it a bunch of times. I don't have very many pictures to prove it, but I've done it a ton of times because I'm not pulling out an expensive non-waterproof camera to take a picture of the 60-pound drum hanging off the side of my kayak.
That is some pretty exciting fishing.
Oh, it is. It's great fun. It's really easy. Those fish are pretty stupid, so it's not like it's not really a whole lot of tricks to be had. There's no secrets of how to catch them. You go out with a pack of frozen shrimp, leave it out for a couple hours, so it starts to get kind of nasty, and dump that over the side of the boat, and then proceed to fish right near that area with either the same frozen shrimp or a chunk of clam or even a quarter blue crab, or if you want the really big fish, a full-size blue crab is the answer. And we use anything from a 2-0 circle hook all the way up to a 5-0, depending upon the size of the crab. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun, and that's what happens this time of year in my area because the water cools down and those big fish move to the bridges, so it definitely makes it interesting.
That's one of my dream trips, and talk about that's basically urban fishing, isn't it?
Yeah, it can be very, very challenging at times when you can't get those fish to cooperate and turn the way you want them to turn or come out of the bridge. But I'll tell you, the success rate is all dependent upon how patient you can be, and don't try and overwork the fish. Because again, you got to understand you're catching a fish that could weigh anywhere. Typical size for the bridges is from about 25 pounds all the way up to 80 pounds. And so, if you try to manhandle a fish that size, especially in a kayak. With the type of gear that we're fishing with, it's just not going to happen. You're going to get owned, and then you're going to go home shaking your head and looking all disheveled and everything else. So
I was sitting down on the coast one day not too long ago, and a guy walks up, and we were at a launch on a little private cove. Guy walks up, and he's staring at my kayak for the longest time. That happens a lot. And he said something that nobody's ever said before. He goes, "To have all those accurate reels on there, you really got to be serious about kayak fishing." And I just started cracking up. But I've thought about it a lot ever since. And one of the reasons on the conventional reels is that clicker. You know, when I first started fishing my kayak, it was all about fishing the California halibut. And they've got this bite where, I mean, you could be talking about a 30, 40-pound flatfish, and he'll roll up to your live bait, cut bait, and he'll mouth it, and he'll paw around with it, and you have your thumb on. And like, how many hours can you sit there with your thumb? And then a lot of the reels that I was using had clickers on them, and I've always loved, you know, fishing open spool with the clicker on. But if it's a light clicker, it really doesn't have much of a purpose for a big fish, because you're going to end up rat's nesting your line or whatever. But that heavy-duty clicker, when something puts it in its mouth and it's heavy enough to turn to take one or two clicks, it's kind of like the clicker going off in the movie Jaws. And it really is loud, too. You get that big pop, 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 and you know right away to get over that thing, and you know, and it gets your attention right away. But I love that kind of fishing. I love big game fishing. You know, you get an opportunity. Unfortunately, around here, when you get into the big, like yellowtail is one of the popular West Coast, you know, Southern California fish, the yellowtail, it's a big jack. And these fish get 50, 60 pounds. But on a kayak, if you're fishing them anywhere near structure, you've got maybe a 10% chance of landing your fish. And then you got to deal with the sea lions, too. And, but you know, when you get into a big species and dial your gear in like that to where you know from the line to the rod and reel what you need to land that fish, and it sounds like the giant reds are really a doable fishery.
Yeah, the giant redfish, it's actually giant redfish are exact opposite for this area than the black drum. I don't fish for big redfish with heavy gear. I fish for big redfish with as light a gear as I can because it's more challenging that way.
Knowing my ignorance, I apologize.
No, it's all right. Just for the simple fact that we're not like the Carolinas or Virginia Beach or any of that area where you're fishing a lot of passes, you're fishing the open ocean and that kind of thing. I'll catch 50-inch redfish in 9 to 10 inches of water. And when those fish are on those flats, I try my best not to use anything heavier than, say, 10-pound Spectra and 12 to 15-pound monofilament, sometimes fluorocarbon, but usually just monofilament leader. And those fish, I'm landing them on small 2,500-size spinning reels, like things the guys would typically use for catching crappie or catching smallmouth bass or something.
Wow.
Yeah, well, because we're fishing the flat, you know, there's nothing out there, it's grass. And so, to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense to heave one in on, say, an 8,000-size spinning reel on, like, a 20-pound rod with 40-pound Spectra. There's not a lot of sport to that, you know.
Right.
Now, landing a 50-inch fish on my personal biggest that I've measured is 52 out of the kayak. 52 inches, and I caught that fish on the Shimano Stratic CI4, the 2500 model, on 10-pound Power Pro and a 12-pound monofilament leader with a 3-0 circle hook and a chunk of ladyfish. So,
it was a fight. There's backing and finesse in that kind of setup.
Yeah, well, you know, it's definitely interesting, and there's times where you feel like, man, what a mistake. You know, like, I don't think this was really that good of an idea after all, but that first initial run is just such a blast, and it's I don't know, man. The way that the spinning reel, see, over here, we've had this discussion before. Over here, we use a lot more spinning gear than you
sure.
guys do over on your coast.
Believe it or not, more popular on the West Coast.
Yeah, and so I'll tell you, like, the little 2500's got 15 pounds of drag. And I know you've been fishing long enough, and so is Isaac and Chip as well. drag poundage, if you really break it down and figure out how many pounds it takes to pull some drag off your reel, 15 pounds of drag for 2,500 is a lot of drag.
A lot of drag.
Yeah, it is.
It's heavy.
Yeah, we fish for king mackerel off our coast with our conventional gear with maybe 2, maybe 3 pounds of drag. So to fish, to be able to, if you have to, stop a fish with 15 pounds, it's not something that's too hard to do, you know, even those big red fish. But it's been, like I say, we're getting in that time of the year. It's right now, it's a cold, balmy 75 degree Fahrenheit. I'm sitting in my truck in the driveway, just got home, and there's a little bit of a drizzle. So, yeah, we're freezing down here in Florida right now. Kidding, of course, but the water temperatures are cooling down. What's that?
It sounds like it couldn't be any more perfect.
Oh, it's absolutely gorgeous, man. The weather today was overcast, and that really helps out with those fish up on the flats and makes them really easy to stalk. Yeah, man, my friends have all been going out catching double-digit redfish every trip the last couple of weeks on soft plastic. So,
what have you been doing? Working for a living?
Yeah, man, I've been busting my butt at the shop. We've been having a sale that has continued on throughout the week, and I've been doing some other things. I'm waiting on a couple of new kayaks to come in, and once I get those, then it's going to be full throttle from here on out.
Is that in the shop or in your rack?
In my rack, my personal rack.
Right on, right on.
So, but today was like Christmas for me, man. I picked up 2 new G Loomis fly rods, and I came home to find that my Canon my Canon camera that I've been waiting on has finally showed up too. So I've got all kinds of new toys and gadgets to get out there and take a bunch of cool pictures and catch a bunch of fish on fly. So I'm really
excited. I got to tell you my Gary Loomis story. For listeners who don't know, Loomis rods are the Cartier of fishing poles. And they have action like rods that haven't been made since the 60s, which is why I use so many Saber rods. And a couple of Loomis sticks, I have since broken them, were custom made from Loomis blanks. There was a spinning and a conventional Loomis kayak rods, about 6'8", actually great, great sticks. So early in my career, at the very beginning of my career, my publisher told me, you've got to go to Mexico and you've got to go fishing on these boats and you've got to write a story that's not kayak fishing. He says, because if you just write kayak fishing, you're just never going to be as good a writer as if you write on all fishing. And I don't know if he was really telling the truth or if he just needed some real fishing, but he was willing to send me to Mexico, and I went. Well, it was one of those trips, that we had 6 days in Mexico, and it was 6 days of rain. And this is an area they say only gets 4 days of rain a year, down in Cabo San Lucas. So here I am. The town is empty. I'm milling around the street. My partner is shopping in stores there. And I see one other guy milling around who looks like his partner is probably shopping in stores too. And he's wearing a Loomis jacket and a Loomis hat. And I thought I was bad stuff, man. I'm writing these kayak fishing articles. Everybody knows my name. And I walk up to him, and I had these awesome Loomis rods. And I go, you like that gear, huh? And he goes, yeah. And I introduce myself, and he goes, oh, I'm Gary Loomis. And I ended up getting a letter a couple weeks later. What a nice way to meet another fisherman and wish me the best.
Hey, you know what? I want to jump in here real quick.
Go ahead.
I think I've heard that story before.
Really? Where would you have
from
heard
Gary.
That? What's
from
that?
Gary Loomis.
Seriously,
Gary
I have
Loomis.
Not spoken to the man since. He sent me a nice letter and said that, and he said, if there's ever anything I could do for you, and I never spoke to him again, but I've always loved his stuff. And he's a legend in fishing, there's no doubt about that, and rightfully so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's retold that story to me at least once.
I am flattered.
Yep.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Did we get you back there, Isaac?
I think
it looks like you're back on. Oh, Chip, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's part of your Loomis interview there. It's in the audio clips.
That's where it is. Okay.
Really?
I think he tells the story in your interview from
I can't believe he even remembers that.
Oh, yeah. He's...
But then again, rainy days in Cabo, you might remember. So,
yep.
I'm really flattered, you guys. Thanks for that.
You know, he's,
I'll tell you what, there's no substitute for quality in any form of our equipment. And even though Lumis has since sold G Lumis off to Shimano, it's the quality's still there. And it's funny, I'm actually in the middle of writing a little testimonial for the Lumis line of their fly reels. I think that it's going to be a pretty cool story. I don't know if I told you yet or not, Isaac, but or Spiker either. My son, who is two years and 5 months today, has already caught his first tarpon fly.
Oh.
You're a sick dad, and tell the boy happy birthday.
Yeah, man. And it was actually pretty awesome. I mean, of course, he had my help, but
wow.
We were fishing some culverts after we had a bunch of rain, and there was probably, I don't know, 15 or 20 of these little small juvenile tarpon that were rolling all in the culvert water coming out. And I thought to myself, wow, this is a perfect opportunity for this. You know, and it's kind of crazy, like, who thinks about putting a two-year-old on a tarpon, right? But, I mean, these are tiny little tarpon. They're, I think his ended up being like 19 and a half inches or so. And,
isn't that an IGFA record in the two-year-old division?
I don't know. If there's a two-year-old division, then I assure you my son will shatter
it
every record.
It is in my division, baby.
There, yeah, it is. But so anyway, so I had the line laid out in the water past where the fish were at, and I told my son, I said, listen, do you want to try and catch a fish? And he's like, yeah, Daddy, I want to fish, whatever. So I get down on my knees on this dirt road, and there's like this couple from Orlando, Florida that are there, and they're watching this all go down. I'm down on my knees. My son's standing next to me. He's got his hand up on the foregrip of the fly rod, and my hand's just below it. And I tell him, I said, listen, hold on to the line. And he holds on to the line. I said, Daddy's going to pull the rod back, and when we do, I'm going to come back forward. You got to let go of the line when I tell you to, okay? He's like, yes, Daddy. Okay, Daddy. So I make the cast. The back cast, I feel the line start to load up. I come forward. I tell him to let go. He lets go of the line. Perfect, almost perfect timing. Fly line shoots out, lands in the water. Fly sinks about 4 inches, and I watch tarpon roll on it. And I'm yelling at him, pull the line. Strip means nothing to him, right? So just pulling the line. So he's pulling on the line. Gets the fish hooked up. Fish takes off down the ditch. Jumps 2 or 3 times, and then I've got maybe about four or five feet of slack between the first guide and the reel. So I need to get the line back on the reel so he can reel the fish in, thus making his fish really kind of. And so I just flicked the knob, and it spun up that 6 foot real quick. And he stood between my legs, and I let go of the rod completely for a second, and he just to see if he had it, and he had it, and he reeled that fish all the way into the bank all by himself. So
right on.
I was super pumped about it, but that was on a 5-weight Lumis fly reel. It's actually a 5.6, so I'm sending a picture of my boy with his first tarpon and the reel. I've got a couple pictures of the reel laying on the ground with the fish. So, but yeah, awesome.
Lumis makes fly gear too.
Oh yeah.
I knew that.
Yeah.
When you see me fishing the fly and going on a 10-day long-range trip, you'll know I'm nearing retirement.
Yeah, I hear you. You know what, man? It's just there's so many species here in Florida to target with the fly rod. And I've actually been fly fishing since I was probably about 8 or 9 years old. And I'm in my garage now. I'm looking at my first fly rod combo that was a Mitchell bronze back from Walmart that my grandfather bought me back when I was like 8. And,
don't ever get rid of that.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And it still has a bass popper on it I used to catch bass with. But so I kind of fell in love with it back then. I laid it down for a while, and one of my buddies took me out fishing and out on the river on his flats boat, and we got into some trout, and that was the end of that. I got hooked bad again, and I'm tying flies and fly fishing and doing all kinds of stupid stuff. So
you got time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Great stuff, you guys. Great stuff. You know, yeah, I think of the fishing
I look at all the woes we have in the fisheries and the apathy of anglers, and, you know, it's always our parents who bring us into it, and we bring our kids and the next generation into it. And I think that this generation of anglers, which due to my antiquated status is really you guys, are bringing the next generation into recreational fishing with a sense of conscientiousness, with a sense of responsibility that I got to be honest with you, as well as Diamond Lil did in bringing me and my brother and the whole family into fishing, they didn't know. There was no education on the fishery. Jacques Cousteau was still talking about the miraculous recovery powers of the oceans, and how wrong was he? But I you know, that is really, and I'm seeing so many events, you know, and this is where we are so different. I mean, I'm sure you guys, you all grew up on head boats too, didn't you?
Absolutely.
So when I got into all this, the one thing that grasped me, I mean, we did the first kayak fishing tournament. I'm trying to think of the year. I think it was 97 at Sheltered Island in San Diego in Point Loma there. And that day, and we only had probably 35, 45 people showing up to fish the tournament. But all of a sudden, their wives show up, girlfriends show up, friends, family, kids. And it impressed me, and it continues to this day, the greater sense of community in kayak fishing. And it's totally undeniable. I look at pictures from every event that gets done around the country, and it really is great. And the ones that just start out as a bunch of guys turn into community events too. So it's a great sport, and we're lucky to be able to participate.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the most important thing to me as a father now, is to educate my kids on the importance and responsibility that we have as anglers to protect that resource and take as good a care of these fish as we can when we catch them, and if we're going to release them, be as careful with them as we can to get them back in the water. So it's a lot of fun, man, and it's just, you know what, it brings me back to when I was a kid. Not to sound too cliche, but it brings me back to when I was a kid, and my grandfather used to take me down to the marinas in Long Island, and I'd sit on the back of somebody's 50-foot whatever, Egg Harbor or Hatteras or whatever, and catch snapper bluefish till I was blue in the face. And, you know, at 2 years old and 3 years old, and just, you know, having an absolute ball. And, you know, I watched my boy interact with my father, and it's like a big cycle, you know, and we're all fishermen, the whole family. So it's really cool. It's really cool to see how, it plays such a major role in our lives, you know, and to see that even at such a young age, he has such a love for it. And he really, truly does. It's the craziest thing you'll ever see.
Well, there's a big sense of karma in there too. And it's funny because I don't know what kind of – I met Michelle, I guess we're going on 5 years this spring, and it was one of those things. I was already nearing 50 years old and never been married and had given up hope, and sometimes that's when the best thing happens. But it was kind of a trick because I met her. Her dad was there, and one of the things he said to me as they were grilling up some marlin they had caught that day is he said, don't ever turn your back on her when you're cutting fish. And what was that bringing me around to? Oh, man, I'll get it back. I lost my train of thought. That's that age thing, you guys, I'm telling you. Somebody pick up for a minute for me.
Don't feel bad, buddy. I get that already, and I'm only going to be 32 this year, so... I've got the worst short-term memory in the world, but no, you know, it's really neat, man. And when we were fishing down here in Florida with Chip and the clone, it was just really cool to see their interaction on the water, and see the clone get so excited about catching, you know, a little redfish or a little trout or whatever. And too often, I think the kids aren't, I guess, just taught or even just shown what fishing's all about, you know. And it's like this generation of kids that are coming out that are fishermen are as serious, if not more serious about it than I was when I was a kid. And it's crazy. Like, I've got kids that come in my shop that are customers of mine that teach me things. It's like, dude, you're 8. Like, how do you know how to do that? How do you, like, I have a kid that ties his own bucktail jigs. This kid is, I want to say that he's probably by now, he's got to be 10 or 11 years old, but he was like 7 and 8 years old, and he would tie his own bucktail jigs to throw on his 8-foot rod for snook down at the inlet, down at Sebastian Inlet. And the kid would crawl out on the rocks at that age with his dad, and he'd be throwing these bucktail jigs and catching 30 and 40 inch long snook. Crazy, just absolutely crazy stuff. So no, it's good, man. It's all good. And the karma thing, I think it has a lot to do with it. My wife, I met my wife, Jessica, close to 10 years ago. And, I'll tell you a really funny story, and I'm going to let you guys go for the evening. But, I met her through a guy that I was in the police academy with, turned out to be her brother-in-law. And, I knew that he had a love for fishing, and I, you know, asked her one day if she wanted to go fishing with me out at the local jetty. And she, of course, said, yeah. And we went down there, and the flounder had been running pretty good. So I'm kind of explaining to her, okay, listen, when the flounder bite, it's a subtle bite. You'll feel a little thump, you know, kind of like your halibut. Don't get excited. Don't over, you know, give them some time to eat the bait. They have weird mouths. It takes them a second. And she ends up spanking me. She ends up putting the wood to me and just literally catching, I think she caught like 4 or 5 more keepers than I did that day. And it was the coolest thing in the world. And I said to myself, I go, man, I got to marry this chick, not just because she's just the most amazing woman I ever met in my entire life, but she has a love for the outdoors. She has a passion for fishing. She's a natural at it. Our spawn is going to be amazing. So, yeah, it was just like, man, if I could have named my kid Shimano and G Loomis coming out of the womb, I probably would have done it. You know what I mean? That's how bad we got it. But no, it's really cool, man. And I'm just so blessed and so excited to be able to share the sport that I love with him, Trey, my oldest boy. And as soon as Logan's old enough to hold a rod, he'll have one in his hands, I assure you.
I think it would be a fine name for a boy.
Yeah.
You might be starting something here. You know, the times have changed. I mean, and I shouldn't say the times have changed. Times have always changed. But now times are changing really, really fast. And it gets me back to thinking about why I'm not an acupuncturist like I went to school for and why I'm making my living in fishing. And it comes back to a whole social societal circle for me that always comes back to sport fishing. Recreational fishing, especially for us, is like a traditional American pastime and a wholesome family activity. And, man, I live so close to the city of Oakland that I see it on the news every night. And it's a world away tucked up here in the redwood trees, but it makes me feel even stronger. I remember in the early days when I started in this sport, and all the old-timers in fishing probably had a problem with just about everything I did in life. But they, as they carted 2 cases of Budweiser down the gangplank to do a kid's fishing trip. And I kind of laughed at that whole take a kid fishing thing because I was young and I was stupid and I just didn't know. And now I see that the take a kid fishing thing, to me, it's a lot bigger than fishing. It's a part of Americana. And the values that run through and around that, and I'm sure you guys, you know, especially Chuck and Chip with kids, you know, that was my whole rant I was heading on to about meeting Michelle. She never had children. I never had children. And we're living through our nieces and nephews and through you guys and your experiences and your kids. And I love it. It's just greatness. A two-year-old on a tarpon, there's got to be a record there.
Yeah, so far, let's see, what has he crossed off? He's got a tarpon, he's got a trout. He hasn't got a redfish yet, but that'll happen this winter.
I've got a redfish. One.
One redfish? Come on down here, man, and see me. We'll put you on a whole slew of them, hopefully.
Your boys was probably bigger than mine, too.
That's funny. Yeah, he's got some brim and some other stuff, too. But yeah, I'm definitely got him a little hit list of fish I want him to try and take out. And then, I'll tell you, it's funny that you brought up the IGFA. As soon as I can financially, I'm going to go ahead and enroll him in, as a lifetime member of the IGFA. And then also, too, I'm going to get him the lifetime sportsman's license down here in Florida. We have what's called the lifetime license, which is basically every permit you'd ever need ever to do anything outdoors. You can buy it when they're young, when your kids are young, you can buy it for a really inexpensive fee. I think I say that, but if you count how much money you spend on permits every year, it's a couple $100, but he'll never have to buy a fishing license ever again, or a hunting license, or any of the permits or tags.
Man, and so, you know what? In this day and age, that's worth it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
This day and age,
and
that's,
you know,
worth it. I mean, you got fishing licenses going up and up every year. I know next year Washington State licenses are going up. Oregon will probably follow here in 2 to 3 years. I mean, just for me to go fishing alone, just fishing this year cost, from a kayak, I will qualify that, fishing from a kayak this year cost $86.
Holy.
Yeah, we're right in that range. I mean, crabbing comes in. First of all, you can get a lifetime license in California, and I looked it up the other day. I think it's still between $500 and $600 for me, and I'm 52 years old. I think if you're younger than me, it's as high as six and change. And I think if you buy it for a two-year-old, it's the same price as if you buy it for a 21-year-old.
Wow.
So it sounds like you're getting quite a deal down there. I spent 43 and change on my fishing license, one enhancement tag for saltwater fisheries, a salmon card had to cost another 20 or 25, a abalone card was easily another 30 or 35. So yeah, I'm up there. I think I'm pushing the $100 mark on tags here.
Yeah.
But again, fish, you know, it at least these monies are going to good places. I don't want pouring money into the state when it's going into the fisheries. Now, a lot of that money's been swindled into other programs, but I think they came back and protected the license money and all the tag and fees monies. They go for sustainability restoration and all that stuff. I'm sure, you know, the states are really, I mean, California just finally automated our license system. This year.
Oh, wow.
Can you believe it? It's the first year we've had an automated license system, which is unbelievable. And I'm sure the revenues are going up, up, up with that. You know, now there's no excuse to take that ticket for not having a license.
Right.
Yeah, it's down here it's not quite so bad. I think for a year, for the permits and the stamps and the extra stuff that I get, I'm probably right around like $30. And that's just because I don't do a lot of extracurricular stuff. I don't lobster, and I don't do a whole lot of waterfowl type stuff, hunting on the hunting side of it. But a saltwater permit down here is I think $18 or something like that. And you know, you always have you want to donate $1 or $10 or whatever to the take a kid fishing thing, and of course you always donate to that. And so yeah, I mean $30-$40 is about average for a typical year for me, unless I know I'm gonna go do something extra, and our extra permits are usually somewhere around $5.50 to $12. So it's not too bad here yet. But they are starting to crack down a little bit. It did go up recently. from I think like $11.50 up to the $15 or $18 or whatever it is now. So
I hate to end the show totally depressed, but thanks, Chuck. You just reminded me. My hunting license and bird tags are taking me way over $100 in licenses for this year before December. So, yeah, welcome to California. But
yeah,
I don't have to go far for anything, and that's a beautiful thing.
Well, man, anytime you or Isaac or anybody gets a chance to make their way down here to Florida, man, I'd be more than happy to take you guys fishing. And if you ever want to come down here and chase around some Easterns or Osceola turkeys, I don't know if you're into turkey hunting. I'm good about that too. So
I'm way into turkey hunting.
You bet.
Really?
From my kayak. Access, baby, access. We're also hunting pigs over here.
Nice.
Paddle across the lake, kill the pig, dress it, put it on the boat, paddle back across to your car.
That's what I'm talking about.
It is kayak fishing and hunting. And
I'm going to have to come down there.
I'm telling you.
The invitation is open all the time. I drop Michelle off at the saloon. I do that 4 days a week. She works there. I usually don't include that part. And there's 30 turkeys in the back by the restaurant garden. 30 turkeys. Wild turkeys. It just makes you.
Well, it is a bar, right?
What's that?
It is a bar, right?
That's
true.
There's
all turkey hanging around the bar.
Yeah, bunch of wild turkeys.
There's wild turkey inside. I'm sure there's one jug of that in there. Great. Hey, thanks for joining us tonight, you guys.
Yeah, great show, man, and I appreciate it, guys.
You got a date scheduled to fish, Chuck?
I'm hoping to get out maybe sometime next week, but this weekend's kind of tied up. I'm going down to the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show and see the all-new goings-ons down there. And then
that's a big show.
Yeah, it's a pretty big boat show.
Let us know what the kayak scene was there?
Yeah, I've talked to a buddy of mine who was there today, and it was actually kind of lackluster for that, but there was a few paddle crafts that were there. Dragonfly had some stuff there and a couple others. So it'll be interesting to see what's there. But as I was telling Chip last night on his show, there's a new product that's out for the guys with flats boats and bay boats that I saw in a magazine not too long ago down here, where it's basically a rack that would insert into flush mount rod holders on the deck of your flats boat, and you can stack your kayaks on it. So for mothership trips, it's pretty cool. And it also doubles as like a hammock hanger. So it's pretty neat. But I'm hoping that those folks are there. If they're there, then I'm definitely going to try and get some interviews and stuff like that done.
Absolutely. I'd love to see more about that.
Yeah, that's new and interesting. That's something that would work everywhere.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. It's going, I'll tell you what, man, I've convinced about a half a dozen of my buddies that are private charter guys to do the mothership trips on the side, and offer it for even the guys wanting to run offshore, catch amberjack, grouper, snapper, that kind of thing off our coast. And then also, too, the guys that do the river tours out of the pontoon boats. I'm like, man, you guys are really missing out. You know, you charge somebody just something reasonable, $25-$35, something like that, to throw their kayak on the boat and take them wherever it is they want to go for the day. You get a group of, you know, six or seven guys to do that. Twice a day or even just a couple times a week, that'll just fill in extra empty holes that you have in your schedule as it is. So it's been interesting, man. It's definitely picking up a lot of steam here in Florida. So
good.
But man, I really appreciate you guys letting me run off at the mouth. Every now and again, I get the hankering to do so. And great show as always, and talk to you guys soon.
Nothing but good information. Thanks, Chuck.
See you guys.
Chip, we still got you?
Yeah, man, I'm about done myself. So
I want to thank you for hanging in for the whole hour, man.
It's all right, man. It was cool.
You got a day scheduled?
Oh man, we're looking at rain around here and cold weather, and we're gonna try to get one last motorcycle run up to the mountains before it gets too cold before we put them in the garage. So
right.
Yeah.
Atlanta. Thanks for tuning in tonight, Chip. Have a great weekend. I want to tell all the listeners the same. Isaac, we're going to have to hook up soon, man.
Yeah, totally. You know, I was just I've been telling the wife that I need a vacation. So
bring her on down to wine country.
Yeah, she's from there. She's cool with that. I don't think that'd be a problem.
We'll hook up off the air. I'm going to sign it off. I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight on Kayak Fishing the Wild West with Spike and Isaac the Nothing Miller on kayakfishingradio.com. Have a great weekend. Keep your lines tight. I hope it's real fishy. And we'll see you next week, Friday, at 5 p.m. Pacific time.